Hello, Podnautians. Welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode 209. My name is Door to Door Geek. Cody Cooper is away from town this weekend. I believe he's very busy on the road doing work-related things, helping to support his family, because, you know, family first, bottom line. We have more than a couple emails. Some of these are actually very old emails that I just decided to bring up. I saw them in my email filter, so I'm pulling them back up. And then we have at least one or two from this week. If they don't mention in the email, if they would like a copy of Larry Bushy's book, Converting a Guide for Computer Users Upgrading from Windows or OXX, if they are interested in getting the book, they can just reply and I'll let them know and we can get everything set up and get these sent out again. Really good book. I bought the physical copy because I like having physical copies. Not to mention, I get a real picture of Larry Bushy. I get to finally put a face with the voice. Great book for anyone starting out, wanting to learn more, or wanting to spread the information on how to use Linux in general. There will be a direct link to it in the notes. No affiliate link in the notes, unlike other people. I kind of like to let you know when there's affiliate links going on. Okay, we're going to jump right into the emails. Okay, here's the first email. First email is from Greg. This is from literally, virtually a year ago. But this is how we roll. Hey guys, I was listening to the most recent shows and thought I'd chime in on the discussion about the DoD embracing open source. I've worked for one of the large three-letter agencies for 30 plus years, both as a employee and as a contractor. So as a full-time employee and as a contractor. He also says, I can say that I've seen the agency start doing this 15 years ago or so. The vast majority of the servers in use are running Linux of some sort. The systems I support either have Red Hat or CentOS. I know other folks who make use of SUSE or OpenSUSE, probably just SUSE, yeah, SUSE. For development software, the Gov does have developers as employees, but there's a ton of contractors writing code. There's contracts that specify that certain open source products must be used, that sort of thing. The .gov is also releasing their own stuff out to open source community. I think we've all heard and complained about SE Linux. That was a NASA created product. Keep the great shows coming. Thank you, Greg. And hopefully we'll be more on top of emails as time goes on. Yes, self-inflicted pun said. I will say this. To me, it's one of those inevitabilities. More and more companies, more and more cultures, more and more governments are going to get more and more involved in open source. Now, there's many avenues to get involved with open source. Some of those avenues are bi-directional, where you can get code and you can push code back, which makes my logic everybody better. One of the things I firmly believe about government is we're going to have to, as a government organization, the American people interacting with the government, we're going to have to take a firmer stance in the future. And I do think as a government employee, we're going to have to be a little bit more responsible and push more natural behaviors into the corporations that we deal with. Like he said, he's worked on both sides of it as a full-time employee and as a contractor. Well, when we hire outside companies, we set laws for them. We have guidelines. They must do A, B, C, and D. Not just about doing the actual work itself, but we have default guidelines that they have to do. We can say 10% of the code they write has to be pushed towards open source. I mean, there are these little things that we have to get pushed into the government contracts when we deal with other companies. And I honestly believe the more that we do it as a government organization, the more those companies will learn to expect it when dealing with other companies. I truly believe it's the kind of thing that will make everybody better. all computing better, all computing more solid, all computing more secure. It's kind of like my stance about healthy. To try to be healthy is suicide and a one-way path down sadness, because you can't be healthy. You can always strive to be healthier, and that's something that right now I'm striving to do. Same thing with secure. You can't be secure. To be secure means unhook every network connection, super glue every USB port, every data port in existence, and basically just open up your computer and play Minecraft or Minesweeper Solitaire, or I guess maybe without anybody on it, Minecraft. Because you really can't be secure. You can be more secure. The government can be more open source. You know, the government can't be open source. It can definitely be more open source kind of thing. So as a government employee, that's one of the things I've been trying to do. I've been trying to whittle into conversations, whether it's on the record or off the record at work, trying to get these little nuanced points in to try to win people over in the long term. Been there for 20 years. I've definitely won some people over. Nowhere am I, and I'm nowhere close to being actually done, is what I will say. It will never be done. It will always be moving forward, and I'll keep trying and trying. Let me get this next email loaded up. Thank you for that email, Greg. That was last September. This email is from Robert, February this year. Oh, okay, that might be better now. Yes. Okay, that was much better. Okay, this email is from Robert. It says, please take a look at DaVinci Resolve for Linux. Video editor by Blackmagic. Cool. Still rocking Linux like Solus, Sabian, Elementary, Chaos, Bungie, and KDE. My goodness, Robert, you're busy. Have a Sony laptop that was designed not to run Linux. Finally got one distribution to run on it. Tried 12 different ones. What a pain. Thanks for the shows. Robert, dude, right there. You just literally typified for me the exact problem with, because it's a three-way problem, with developers, users, and purchasers. You can be all three if you want, or you can put yourself in one or more of those shoes. You have to be able to, when you go select hardware, have the ability to know ahead of time how Linux compliant is that hardware. If you buy hardware 1, 2, 3, 10 years later, decide to get into Linux, you will have a literal crapshoot. You take the dice, you put them in your hand, you throw them out, and then you might work perfectly on Linux. You might not work whatsoever on Linux. There is no guarantee whatsoever that anything is going to work in Linux. So that's going to be one of those little painful things. I'm happy you got one to work. Now, what I encourage you to do, first thing to do, make an image backup of that thing. Just because you never know how it's going to act, how it's going to react after any kind of update with picky hardware. Sony hardware, stereotypically, it ain't the truth, but stereotypically, historically, it's very picky and very finicky. Once you get something to work on it, you don't breathe on it too heavy because it might break. I will say, taking a look at this, DaVinci Resolve, this email is back on February 25th. This is, you know, September, basically. Looks unbelievably polished, really, like, crazy high-end. Let me click the download link, public beta, studio, public beta, studio, and just a regular version. Windows, Mac, and Linux available for all three of them. I gotta say, that alone, it's available for all three. I'm very impressed. What I'm going to do, because I don't know nothing about this stuff, I'm going to send a copy of this URL to Klaatu. Klaatu, to me, is the most profound, highly educated person when it comes to video, everything about video, video manipulation, video transcoding, video creation, video saving, and video production. And that's what this looks like, a very, very high-end engineered solution for all kinds of multimedia video creation. This is really Wow. Really impressive. The only, I mean, that's the only word I can think of is really impressive. So impressive, I can't even tell anything good or bad about this. I'm so overwhelmed by the pretty knobs on their boards. Oh, wait, that almost sounded perverse. Sorry about that. The plug-in effects, the mastering, editing automation. Wow. This is definitely going to Clot 2. Robert, wow. This is nuts. I'm going to send this to him, and I really want to get his input on it. I will let you know if I hear anything back via podcast, but I can tell you right now, I'm really, really impressed. This is really pretty. This is really a beautiful solution. Hopefully, Clot 2 doesn't stomp a mud hole in it, because I know he's a fan of Flowblade. At least right now, he's an extreme fan of Flowblade, which he can be. So that works. Okay, quick tip to everyone. When in doubt, try Control-Shift-V. Control-Shift-V. Even in full GUI editors, sometimes you'll be amazed at the results. Let me just say that. Okay, next email here. This is from John. Well, this is definitely a longer email. Okay. Subject, you guys are amazing. Message body. I've been wanting to write and thank you recently, but I always think about it while listening to car. So now I thought of this while sitting in front of my computer. Your show is by far the best tech show I've ever seen and listened to before. To put it in a bit of perspective, I've listened to literally between 1,000 and 2,000 plus hours of content every year. I've been self-employed for a long time, and I love to keep my mind engaged if work allows. I've mentioned listening to you in the car earlier, but I do have a problem with that. This is the first time I've ever listened to a podcast that had me trying to set voice reminders over and over to follow up on something that you mentioned. I've been working in and around technology for many years, and have over the last few years really gotten the Linux bug. I am devouring everything I can get my hands on: classes, podcast, book, home lab, etc. So as to try to move into the Linux admin field, your podcast always gives me so much to add to my proverbial toolkit, though it's quite satisfying to be thoroughly familiar with some topic you might bring up. Those are not as common. You guys rock. Since I started listening, I backed up to start with all the episodes from a year ago. Eventually, I'll get to all of the previous years as well. Thank you, John. Wow. Thank you very much, John. That's a fantastic email. And you gave me a great exercise in reading. Reading is not my best forte when it comes to these doing podcasts. Really quick, not all of the shows of all of the networks are available via XML feeds. Technical issue. FeedBurner will not allow more than a 1 meg RSS XML file, so I have to cut how far back a lot of these feeds will go. If you want more of those shows, all you got to do is let me know, and I can send you share links to Google Drive folders where I have one of my backups going, to where you can download all the episodes as you wish, kind of thing, as much as you would like to. There is ways in every mobile podcast catcher player that I've ever seen where you can add what's called a virtual directory. Instead of subscribing to an XML feed, you can download all the shows you want, put them in a folder in the podcast player, say, point to this folder, and it will act like an RSS. So you can listen to all those shows in your player of choice at the speed you like, at the pace you like, kind of thing. This show has morphed throughout the years. One of my firm beliefs about all podcasts is to go into a podcast with a strict regimen of what you can and cannot do and never waver from that is a complete failure on everybody's part, and the podcast will crumble and implode and fail. It's just a question of how long, aka how much perseverance do you have? My belief is you go into each podcast with a core list of goals. goals you would like to do. You don't have to do, but you would like to do. And then during each week, during each episode, during each sentence spoke in every podcast, you allow yourself to move the targets, move the goals. It's a living, breathing thing. The podcast needs to constantly change, or else you're going to just want to end up repeating the same thing over and over and over again and drive yourself insane. Yeah, I think that's how I feel about that. But here's the thing. With this podcast, we have hit a very, very, very broad range of topics, a very broad range of specialities, if it's a real world word, I'm going to say that. But one of the core things I believe I've said since about episode one is, if you want money, get into Linux. If you like computing, get into Linux. If you want to be able to move to any country in the world, any city in the world, and make reasonable money, learn Linux. If you want to expand your future and guarantee job for yourself in the next 5-10 years, learn Linux. If you want to join something where you can learn just as much from individuals as you can from corporations, learn Linux. If you would like to make as much money off of Linux as other people are, individuals are, you can learn Linux. If you would like to become as important as anybody else developing a kernel, developing an operating system, you can do that by learning Linux. You can put yourself as a key developer. You cannot know anything about C++. And in 3 years, you could be one of the most prolific kernel developers we've ever seen, if you want to. It's a question of drive and determination. Everything about this operating system is in the clear. The kimono is completely open for you to look at and gander at and fiddle with the parts if you want. You can do whatever you want to do in this, and you can play with it to your heart's content. You can learn anything about anything. The two sources I'll give for learning right now, I think, that are the best. Unfortunately, they both cost money, and by that I mean at least you don't have to dig through really bad content, because there's so much bad content out there. If you go to either LinuxAAcademy.com or ITProTV, either one of them, I think, do a really good job. The difference is ITProTV only does some Linux. They don't do everything in Linux. They just do the money-making things in Linux, and then they do everything else. Windows this, Macromedia Adobe that, video editor this. They do all kinds of different stuff and a whole bunch of security stuff too. But if you just want to learn Linux, Linux Academy is second to none. They're not paying me to say that. They're second to none. Can't be beat. Really, right now, they can't be beat. Give them your money. If you have the time to invest into learning, you will be extremely satisfied. And if that means you listen to less podcast, I salute you. Maybe when you make more money, you can come back and you can let us know how everything went in your time of learning and educating yourself and seeing if you can do a little bit better. Okay, next email is from, looks like, Trevor. Let me try this Control Shift V thing again. Oh, like butter. Like butter is what I want to say. But I'm going to copy it and repaste it down here. Okay. This one is from Trevor, August 29th. Today. Wow. That's crazy. Today. Oh, okay. The other one I think was also from Denver. We'll get back on that. Okay. Subject line, 0% free on boot equals no updates. I think that subject line says a lot there, Trey. It really does. Okay, here we go. Linux has been increasing percentage of my computing life for the past 5 years. So far, it has always been flavors of Ubuntu, but one problem has bitten me 4 times now. After about 6 to 9 months of use, I can't get updates, install, or uninstall anything. In the past, I have said, oh, well, I want to upgrade to the next Ubuntu or try that other distro anyway. I back up documents, do a fresh install, and live happily for another 6 months. It happened again last week. And this time, I made the effort to dig in why. Okay, we're going to pause that right there. I'm going to guess a couple things. One, the intermediate releases of Ubuntu, the non-long-term support editions, don't have long-term support, number one. Number two, I'm going to guess it's going to be something about the boot partition filling up, not getting rid of old kernels. I'm going to have a link in one of my golden commands I always run on all my operating systems when I'm in the mood to do updates. And it's essentially this. I'm going to read it out, but don't try to copy it down. In the notes, it's going to be sudo apt update, ampersand, sudo apt upgrade, ampersand, sudo apt dist dash upgrade, ampersand, sudo apt auto clean, ampersand, sudo apt auto remove. That does everything. In one command, it will go out, update, go out, do the updates, go out, do the distribution updates, go out, get rid of all packages that are no longer needed, and go out and remove old versions of the kernel, which would free up more space in your boot sector. This will be in the notes again. I will say that. Let me see if it will let me even copy this right now. Again, Control Shift C when you want to copy it. Let's come over to the notes and put this down at the bottom of his notes. And yes, it worked fine. Okay. Back to the email. It happened again last week. Okay. Ready? It happened again last week, and this time I made the effort to dig in why. The boot partition is completely filled with old kernels, I think. Please enlighten me further on what is in there. I tried fiddling with an apt clean and an apt auto remove and a dpkg, but it looked like the last update failed due to insufficient space, and apt and dpkg wanted to fix that issue before doing anything else, but couldn't do to no disk. I booted into a USB live and I tried to use kparted. This is my KDE current fave. Kparted would not let me shrink the main partition, but not move it. Therefore, there was no additional space for boot. Some Google searches suggested I could just delete old kernels, but experience tells me that's kind of digital roulette and it's never a good idea. I ended up doing a fresh install and everything is fine now. Sorry I didn't capture any of the output so you could help me better. I'm the kind of Linux user who installs updates from the package manager whenever suggested, and I think that the OS should handle everything else after that. Does this happen to me because I'm too willing to add PPAs? I don't think I add very many, but honestly, I don't keep track. Are these old kernels in there because Steam adds them for compatibility? Is there some care and feeding that I should be doing? And the most important, and most importantly, this keeps me from recommending Linux to anyone who does not like to mess with the computer. The more important. Did I mess up reading that email? Oh no, that's how it ends. Okay, so yes, it was the boot partition. Okay, now, this harkens back to a great, great pain of mine. There is no right answer. There's never a right answer. There will never be a right answer. But there's better. Again, just like the health thing, there's better. Number one is, for the newest of the newest of the newest user, when you go and to install the operating system, there should only be one partition. Only one. Slash. Everything goes in there. That, so if you have a 300 gig hard drive, it will probably take you 600 years of kernel updates to fill up your boot partition, because you're not just filling up your boot partition, you're filling up your entire hard drive. Okay. Some people don't do that because of their var logs might this, or because of their temp might that, or so their boot this and their kernel that and their root this and all that. There is no fundamental, there is no extreme benefit outweighed to the new user than stability, period. Okay, I don't have Linux Caster done yet, There's a couple more things I got to do, and I got to harass HostGator a little bit more. When that is up, one of my first videos will be on the proper way to do an installation. And the number one rule is don't do the recommended installation. It is completely wrong. It is intended for advanced users. It's not intended for new users. And I still haven't found a single OS that I can say with definitive, absolute positivity, every installation it does this. There should only be one partition. Two, if you want to have a swap. My logic is most computers today, especially if you have 16 gigs of RAM, I'm not a firm believer in swap. That's, I'll just say that. Now, you know, if you want to sleep, you want to hibernate, I believe you do have to have something of that. But we're not going to get into that argument right now. Just the boot partition. Okay. But either way, I'm going to put the command in the notes. This is how I always do all my updates. Here's another little dirty secret tip. Okay. I do this command whenever I want to do an update. I do this whenever I want to do an upgrade. I do this command whenever I want to do any of these things. If I ever want to independently just say right now I want to do an update, I go into my command line, I hit space, and then sudo apt update enter, my password enter. That's because with the space in the beginning of the command, it does not get saved to history. So when I open up the command prompt, hold down control, hit the letter R, type E-U-P-G-R, the first thing it's going to find is this big long string of commands that I run. This is my maintenance and my update and my upgrade command I use. Literally, Eric R. Deeney, co-host of Android App Addicts, I convinced a couple months ago to have Linux installed on one of his computers because every time he came into Windows, it was doing this and it was doing that and upgrading and taking 2 hours to reboot, kind of fiascos. And this first time he told me he had a low disk space, I didn't even ask for any more information. I copied this command line over and I sent it to him. This is a, if you have a second, can I speak to you about my Lord and Savior, Darth Plagueis, kind of thing. It's obvious, okay? Anybody who knows anything about Linux knows this kind of issue happens. Yet for some reason, the developers that I know of haven't fixed it. The problem is the boot partition should not be a partition. It should never be a separate partition. Only for advanced users should it be a separate partition, not for the normal desktop user. So that's the failing of it. I personally don't keep any old kernels around. That's one of my things. I get rid of every old kernel. What I will say is, if it needs it for a Steam game, I've never heard of such a thing. I'm not the expert to be asking about this. The only person I know that I trust asking for anything game-related in any shape, way, or form is Ven Stone and the guys over at Linux Gamecast. Love them, hate them, whatever you feel about them, because some people I know say they can't listen to them, they can't watch them because of their mature content. I'll just say this, love them or hate them, nobody knows more, period, bar none. I don't say that lightly. I don't push people up on pedestals quickly, okay? Nobody knows better. I can help you with your general kernel issues. I can help you with your general issues like these. You ask me, is Steam keeping around kernels? I don't have a clue. LinuxGamecast.com. You can give them a shout on Google+, on Twitter, via email. When they have time, they will answer you. And when they answer you, they will answer you completely. And I can tell you, you can trust what they say. They know much, much, much more than me. PPAs, really quick. Trey, I feel exactly identical to you. I never want to use a PPA unless I absolutely have to. I sometimes do. I don't want to, but sometimes I do. But I really don't want to, but sometimes I still do. Okay, period, I do. And here's the real logic reason. Installing a PPA is like going to an auto parts store and purposefully opting for the you've never heard of manufacturer and sticking that part in your car. Okay, unless you're an expert, you really don't understand the full implications of what that part's going to do into your car. Same thing with Linux. Unless you really understand what this application can do, will do, want to do, you really don't know what are the implications down the road if the developer of this application does not keep everything up to date in a correct fashion and you go do an update. Is stuff going to break? So I very often don't install PPAs. Sometimes you don't have a choice. Okay. The more PPAs you earn, there's correlation. Okay. This is a direct correlation I can put money on. The more PPAs you add, the more software you add, the more probable a dist upgrade or a complete version upgrade in Ubuntu will break or not work right, or you'll see weird behavior. It's just a fact of life. That's what happens. I will also say, again, I just want to stipulate this. If stability is your target, your goal, only install LTS editions of Ubuntu. Do not install the 10.10s, the, 17.04s. Just install the long-term support versions, and you will be much happier. Thank you again for that email. Trey, I will respond to you and say, if you want a copy of the book, just let me know. Come back up here, get a copy to Larry Bushy's book, copy, paste, control C, because I'm going to say it again. Okay, email sent to Trey. Thank you very much for that email again, Trey. Let me make sure I have it in the notes correctly. I do. Okay. And I have a copy of my command at the very end that I type to do all my updates. Okay. Next email here. Oh, this is from Matt. And I want to make sure it's okay to be read on the show before I just start reading it. Okay. I think we're fine. Okay, this is from Matt, MRP Tech Reviews, one of the newer shows on the network. If you haven't listened to it yet, very down-to-earth guy, loves technology, dare I say, techno-lust about everything technology, Mac, Windows, Linux. He's very up on all kinds of science, from Elon Musk and SpaceX to doing personal investigations in missile silo towers in his own backyard. Okay, here's the email. I just listened to Linux for the Rest of Us 208 and DDG number 8. I'm sorry to hear about the car. I'm very glad to hear you are okay. Linux for the Rest of Us is how I became a fan of Podnuts. The last episode inspired me to start thinking of tackling the last couple of hurdles preventing me from going Linux full time. I have a lot of similar approaches to what Cody mentioned in the show last show. Most of my hurdles relate to very specific audio production needs for live music and video editing. Deep breath. Oh, man. But it's something I've been thinking about trying for over a year now. Thanks for the inspiration. It may lead to experimenting on my part, which I haven't done in a while. DDG8 was fantastic, very down to earth. I've never really liked the Patreon model or ads and podcasts. I was glad to hear you saying similar things. All I can say is I hope Podnuts gets to where you want it to be when you retire onwards and upwards. I always hope in some little way my lame podcast helps your network in any way possible. Jesus, Matt, your podcast ain't lame. I wouldn't have asked you to be on the network. No need to use these comments in shows. Just wanted to pass on. They were great. Thanks, Matt. Well, Matt, this is what happens when you don't read something and then you bring it in for a podcast. Matt's a really nice guy, period, bottom line. If you notice, nothing's changed with ads on the network because I keep having some fictitious hope of some light piercing out of nowhere coming down on top of me and bestowing me with things that I don't have to worry about doing ads for. Foolishly, I keep waiting for that to happen, and it doesn't. So I'm still not really convinced what we're going to do. I just know we're going to do something. That's all I can say. Okay, most of my hurdles related to very specific audio production needs for live music and video editing. My goodness, my goodness. Okay, Matt, here's where we get into trouble. Here's where we get into hard times. Here's where we get our hand stuck in a gear of a 3 billion pound clock, and the gear wants to crush our body. Okay. It's dangerous. Don't go alone. Take this. This is really, man. Okay. One of the compromises made in Linux years and years ago was a real time kernel. There are certain trade-offs. There are certain pros and cons to either not having a real-time kernel or having a real-time kernel. Linux decided years ago that the primarily developed focus would be on a non-real-time kernel, but will give people the option of doing real-time kernel switches in order to make any kernel real-time. Okay, 99% of the distros you go download right now, you install, they're not real-time. You can make them real-time, but it's often like going into an engine and turning it from a diesel to a gas engine. It's not that simple. And for you to expect to be able to go into any OS and switch that switch and all of a sudden things working fine, you are going to be very sadly mistaken. Okay. Once you switch to a real-time kernel, the game changes. The most important thing now is, honestly, what applications you're using, how optimized they are, how optimized is your hardware, what's your processor, what's your RAM, what's your audio card, how supported are they in software, and then software, how familiar are you with the software to get it to do what you want to do. Okay, now, we said that. Ubuntu Real Time Kernel. Ubuntu Studio. Okay, sorry. Ubuntu Studio is the easiest way to get Linux with a GUI that's friendly and has a real-time kernel. Okay, that's also out of the way. To go for anything else is going to mean immensely more work, immensely more configuration, immensely more heartache, but you would probably get better results. Okay, wax on, wax off. Mr. Miyagi, there, you know, it takes work. It takes work if you really want to be the champion and put them in a body bag, okay? But if you just want to test stuff and get stuff working, and it might be your answer, Ubuntu Studio is the way to go. You're going to probably have to tweak it. You're going to probably have to go in and tweak the jack controls, okay? The jack audio video control toolbox and tweak those settings to get everything just right. Because while it says real-time kernel, to get a true real-time kernel with truly in real-time doing everything, you're going to need like a $6,000 computer. Matt's a teacher. Matt can't afford a $6,000 computer, okay? So while you're going to be able to get a real-time kernel, it's a question of how much delay is acceptable when you start to do this, and hopefully you can spend less than $1,000 in your hardware and get the delay so low it's really not noticeable. Video editing, though, is the complete opposite. You don't need real-time kernel for anything video editing. Once you introduce real-time kernel and jack, things change. Here's a perfect use case where a true dual booting computer might be perfect. One of the dual boot OSs is a real-time kernel. The other one is not. Because if you go into Ubuntu Studio and you find that your video stuff isn't working exactly like you expected to, or exactly how you experienced in this other Linux distro, it might be the real-time kernel causing things to happen a little bit differently. Knowing me, this is what I'm going to say. If it was me, to really see if this can be done, first, Matt, you're going to have to take yourself out of at least one of those live showings, which I know you don't want to do. Matt's a musician and a teacher, and he really does enjoy doing his music stuff. To really test this thing, you're going to need to test it interactively. You're going to have to be able to twist the knobs as the show's going on to see what the results are when you twist that knob versus that knob. I can guarantee you it's possible. I don't know it's going to meet your expectations, though. And here's the other thing. Don't go full Linux unless you feel some sort of cognitive bias needs to be satisfied. Okay? There's nothing wrong with using anything else. There's nothing wrong with using anything else, whether it's Mac, Windows, or anything else. If it's a personal thing you want to tackle, have at it, have fun, but make sure you keep your options open. It's the number one thing I got to say. Keep your options open. And I ain't even asking Matt if he wants a book. I already have his address. I'm going to send you that book, Matt. Larry Bushy's Upgrading from Windows and Mac OS X, because I can't thank Matt enough for being on the network, supporting the network, and trying to make sure that we pod nuts keep getting better over time. Okay, let me take now a look. Okay, there was two things I just wanted to talk about really quick. One is to an article on opensource.com by David Both. Okay, David, both. Okay. It is called Using rsync to Backup Your Linux System. Dirty secret. Virtually any kind of backup you do on any operating system, whether it be Unix, BSD, Windows, Mac, or Linux, it's either already using rsync or it's using something that's emulating rsync. There is no other thing, okay? They are. That's just the way it is. rsync was developed. Everyone looked at it and said, works pretty good. I'm going to copy that. Type, 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 type. Because that's how damn good rsync is, okay? You can take a look at this. It goes through different descriptions and definitions, what your options are, how to use the rsync command, what some of the options mean, like why you want the dash A option to for archive mode, which keeps the permissions and ownerships all in place. Goes through the link dest option. Link dest option means if something was deleted from your current and it, do you want to also show it now deleted from the backup kind of thing. I believe. Either way, I can tell you guys, there's two things, rsync and then there's grsync. Grsync, if I can find a link to it, also have the notes. It's a nice GUI way you can design your preferred rsync command, and then you can basically copy it out and use it in your own way. This is one of the things I used to use just for figuring out. I'm trying to get the right verbiage. What was my preferred command I would use for my rsync? It was grsync. Old, very old application. I was using this, I believe, on like Ubuntu 10.10, and it works really good, really easy. Preserve time, preserve owner, preserve group, size only, ignore existing, and you can go through a whole bunch of different options, and then it will basically spit out the exact command that you need to then use in your backup settings. I believe also this guy's article does go through cron and where you can set it up as a cron task. They tell you how to set it up as a backup script. Yeah, to use a cron job. Really good article. Really well verbed is what I'm going to say. Of course, I listened to it as I was reading it. I use Say It on my Android device. It allows me to see the text as I listen to it. Dare I say it's a assistive technology that I find very useful and that I did pay for because it works really good. Okay, next one I'm going to bring to the show. I haven't really had any time to look at this whatsoever, but I'm a sucker for clickbait nerd-related things. And I'm sorry, this really did strike me in just the right way for me to want to look at it. Okay, it's called the Smallest Server Suite, SSS. Which thankfully it's not called SS because, that's not good, but it's SSS. Okay. It says 4M Linux developer Zygbanu Kanjiraki, I can't even come close to pronouncing that, informs Softpedia on Sunday about the release and general availability of the SSS, the Smallest Server Suite, version 22.2. Version 20-frigging-2.2. So this thing has been around for a very long time, apparently, and I've never heard of it. Basically, it's a server-oriented distribution that you install. Once you install, you have your atypical, stereotypical, exactly like you would expect server admin, a web interface into all of these tools that you can use to do your configuration on your server. I'm going to tell you guys right now, I am very impressed off of reading the features and reading some of the things that goes on with this thing. I really do want to look at loading it in a VM just for play, see how it works. I would love it if they had a version of this for ARM-based devices, because to me this would be a hell of a lot of fun in order to run on one of those. But I don't know. We're going to have to play with it a little bit. I don't believe they have one, but either way, even if it's an old x86 laptop, I think it would be a lot of fun to get this up and running. Last thing I want to talk about is sending us a voicemail. Don't hesitate. You want to send us a voicemail, we will play it. I got the hardware sitting over here next to me. 7076PodNut. Haven't heard from them for a long while. Email us at podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. And we do have links in the notes to our Newegg link, eBay link, our deals page, and our clothing. If you yourself would like a PodNut shirt or a PodNuts hat, you can go to podnuts.com/clothing. You'll be redirected to the Zazzle webpage. The more people that show me an interest in more type of clothing or a swag, I'll do everything in my power to try to get more of that stuff created and available for sale. I want to thank everybody for the emails. I want to remind everyone, support those who support you. Do not hesitate. Send me more emails. I would still like to give away another two emails, another two books next week. The only way you're going to be available to get those books is if you send me an email in at podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. And I want to honor Cody by saying Linux is not just for any of us. That's not right either. PodNuts. Linux is for the rest of us. And this is why we need Cody, because I'm not good at anything. Thanks, everybody, and I'll talk to you in about a week.